Hi, this is Iris Jackson, and this is Miracles Happen, Dreams Do Come True. And today, this is a miracle in my life. She has things that I wanted to learn and receive and give and share with you to help and assist and empower you in having your dreams come true and be 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible, and to keep opening to more perfection and more of the glory of God and more of living a miraculous life. And so everything I do is for that purpose, and for me and you and all of us. And so with that, I'd like to introduce to you, if you don't already know her, the beautiful, beloved, precious, dear, Patricia Ress.
Hi, Iris, and everyone who is listening. I'm so excited to be on your show, as I've never done that before. I've heard a lot of your speakers speak, and you create miracles in every show you do. So, thank you.
Oh, thank you, Patricia. I am excited because I understand that you're going to transmute Diksha during the show.
Yes, I'd like to do that towards the end so everyone can have a direct experience of that transmission of energy.
And it's for the purpose of raising our vibration and frequency and our mastery. And you know, I like to think of it as, you know, it seems to me that a lot of people have been ordering from the menu of life that's a menu they don't really want. Like, there's nothing on the menu that's tasty. And I think that you're in the business of, I'm in the business of, encouraging people to order from a whole different menu, from the divine menu.
Yeah, and the Diksha, this energy is a special frequency that is intended for enlightenment, for the recognition and eventual direct experience of who, or you may say what, we really are. So it quiets the mind, and it works directly with the brain, and it also energizes the frontal lobes of the brain, which are active to a certain and very specific extent, and this has been proven scientifically, with people who meditate a lot or who are enlightened. So there are actual physical brains are different, and the energy or circuitry, so to speak, is different with that experience and with a lot of meditation. So this helps to boost that.
Do you know who said this, that starting your day without meditation is like going to the grocery store without money? Do you remember who said that?
I've never heard it. Could you repeat it again?
Starting the day without meditation is like going to the grocery store with no money. And, you know, what I find for myself, if I've started the day with, you know, sometimes like the day's gotten up before me, and I'll just, you know, I'm going to meditate, and I go in the kitchen to get something to drink, and I make a mistake like turning on the answering, listening to the messages, and sometimes there's stuff I shouldn't have done until after meditation. You know what I'm saying?
And then sometimes you're just caught in the day, and so it's just rolling.
Well, I just find that what you're really doing in meditation is calling forth the source of all good from the center of your being, and then asking that part to make the to-do list and to do the to-do list.
Yes. Yes. And so, then everything comes from a different place.
Yeah, and you remember to order from the menu you want stuff on. I think that's real important.
I like your very practical day-to-day analogy.
Well,
the menu of the grocery store. Yeah, I like that.
It works for me. And, you know, I want you to sort of share your process with how you came to be doing this, Patricia. I was talking to Dawn, I never say her last name because I can't say it right. You say it.
Well, I'm not sure if I'll say it right either. Fazand?
Fazand. Well, she's the publisher of the publisher, the editor, the the everything of Mount Shasta Manor.
Creator.
Yeah, yeah. And her phone number is almost exactly the same as yours. There's one number different.
Right.
And she sent me a long email when she heard that you were going to be on the show, and she was talking about, I was thinking about the way you come from divine love in a real practical way. And you had just got, didn't you just get back from Brazil when Dawn was taken to the hospital?
I think I was coming back from, yeah, we could do a whole show talking about miracles with Dawn. Oh, my gosh. I was just getting back, I don't remember if it was Israel or India, when she called me to take her. She said her back hurt, and we used to pop each other's backs. And, you know, I'd only been home a few hours and was a little jet-lagged, so I was like, couldn't we put this off till tomorrow, Dawn?
Yeah.
But my back really hurts. And then it hurt more and more. And so I did go over, and we took her to the hospital. And I don't know where we... So she had quite a miraculous healing because they didn't expect her to live through what happened. She's just an amazing person.
Well, you stayed with her and supported her in having those miracles, and also organized a whole team of people to come over and spend the night with her, taking turns and bring food and feed her cats and really nurture her. And I felt that all of us on the planet doing this work were totally pulling for her because we need her.
Well, you know, Dawn was so loved, and this town in Mount Shasta and the community is so wonderful and giving most of the time. It's so evident that actually someone needed to step in and organize all the help, or she'd have 10 dinners every night and 5 people coming over to take care of her during the night. It's just amazing. It was amazing. People, you know, just move there, popping in and wanting to come and take care of her. Beautiful. So it was the organization and just feeling all that love for Dawn. It was quite an amazing time.
Hi.
Hi.
Sorry, we had a bad echo, and so Dawn had me hang up and called me back.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, I thought you heard that, Patricia.
No.
But good to tell everyone.
I was wondering.
You know, and thank you for not hanging up. I was thinking that with you, and all the people I'm interested in having on the show and learn from, and we support each other in doing our mission, is that you are living proof and a tangible focus of the victory and accomplishment that divine love alone can bestow.
It's been, my life and that I'm still alive and walking and everything has been quite an amazing blessing. Had a car accident in 1989, a single car accident, and it was my first time in Mount Shasta. I was up here for a spiritual camp, summer camp kind of thing.
And you didn't know everything that was on the
the menu?
Yeah. I was going to say that, but... Oh, it's the small print. And for the third part of the seminar... Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to...
Well, actually, there was no dessert on the menu. And so several of us were thinking at 10 o'clock at night, we'd drive... it was at a resort and on a windy mountain road, and we thought we'd drive into the closest little town and get some dessert. So at 10 o'clock, we started out in a car, and the car was going rather rapidly around curves. All of a sudden, I'm going to back up a little bit. My daughter was a teenager, and so we had made a pact to always use our seatbelts. I got in the car, and there were no seatbelts in this rental car. And apparently they had been pushed under the back seat. But I felt so divinely guided at that time. I thought, everything's fine. All is in divine order. So I hopped on in the back seat, and there were three of us women in the back seat, and we were going down the mountain road, and all of a sudden, I knew there was going to be an accident, and someone was going to die. And I knew I had a choice if I went or not. And I said that I didn't want to. This was all happening internally, because it'd be too hard on my mother and my daughter. So we were skidding around one corner, we went to the next corner, and went into a left-hand skid, and the back door popped open, and it was all slowed down, as these things are, those times, frame by frame, as I started sliding out the car, and knowing there was nothing to do but surrender. Nothing to stop it, nothing to resist.
Sometimes I really hate that class.
Well, you know, this was not my normal personality, so something took over, and I was totally at peace. And then in the midst of the flying out of the car, I thought, gee, just in case I don't get my wish and I am going to die, you know, I think I remember hearing somewhere that if you chanted the name of God at the time of death, it would, you know, help your evolution. So I thought, I don't know any names of God. I only know God. So, and I hadn't been exposed to the Hindu tradition or any of that yet. And so I just kept saying, I love you, God, I love you, God, I love you, God, as I flew out of the car. And I was also at that time reminded that during that day, something arose inside me. There was this desire to have an experience where I knew I was more than the physical body. So all day long, I'd had this mantra running. I want an experience where I know I'm more than the physical body, and I want it right here, right now. And it just chanted over and over and over with me all day long. I hardly talked to anyone, anything.
Is this before the accident?
Yes, this is the day of the accident.
Okay.
And so I was going to have that experience. And so I flew out of the car. I remembered landing on my rear end, and then there
that
was another car.
That would be the best place for me.
Pardon?
That would be the best place for me.
Yeah, me too. However, I did fracture my pelvis in 7 places. I cracked a rib and cracked my spine, and I was unable to move anything except my right forearm. But I'd had a death experience, so I was in ecstatic joy and didn't even think of any possibility of anything being wrong with the body, and the body didn't matter after the experience I had. I remember, actually, this will sound a little strange, I don't remember going to the light or anything like that. I remember taking the woman who did die and not come back, taking her somewhere in the universe. And when I came back, I thought, oh, that was kind of far away. Been gone a long time. And then I thought, oh, no time, no space, you know. But I got back to the body, and it was not functioning. And I was given a choice then to come back in this body or to, this sounds pretty bizarre, but this was my experience, or to be born again in an infant body as a baby. So I chose the broken, dead body, and it was jump-started. And the next thing I knew, I'm laying on my side in the dark, on this dark road in fetal position, just not really aware that I couldn't really move the body. But I was aware of the driver running back and forth between the other two women that had been thrown out of the car, and he was quite panicked, it felt like. Then all of a sudden, as I'm laying there, you know, with my head on its side in the road, I open my eyes, and there right in front of me were 2 very shiny, immaculately polished black shoes. As I took my gaze up, there were dark, probably dark blue, very neatly pressed pair of pants. And as my gaze went up, I could see it was the uniform of a policeman. And I thought, that's funny, I didn't hear any vehicles come. Then I looked at the policeman's face and thought, you know, he looks too young to be a policeman. He looks like 14 or 15. He asked me how I was. And I said, oh, I'm fine. And I was just so happy. And we joked around a little bit. He went over to the driver, who was still back and forth between the two bodies, and he went to the driver and he said, do not worry. All is in divine order.
Woo-hoo!
And we were immersed in this cloud of gold, and it was like a really big flakes of gold glitter. And we both talked about this afterwards, having seen it. So he said, do not worry. All is in divine order.
You and the
policeman? And then he was gone as fast as he came.
You and who talked about it later?
The driver and I.
Uh-huh.
About the gold and about the person there. And so it wasn't until later that rescue teams came, the EMTs and the fire department and the ambulance and everything. But this man was not part of that.
Oh, well. So, then what did you do?
Well, then we were whisked off to, so my first day in Mount Shasta, it was at the hospital, because we were actually outside of Mount Shasta. You know, mystical, spiritual Mount Shasta. And had a room with a view. I was so happy. I only had a roommate once, And she complained and asked to be in another room. She said the light was so intense in the room that she couldn't sleep all night. There was just so, it was such a blessing, you know, such grace. There was a lot of light running through me, and people were coming doing healings, and it was an amazing time. And I had Kaiser Insurance, which is a big HMO down in Sacramento where I lived, and they thought I could be in the hospital up to 6 months. So they flew me by air ambulance after a week down to Sacramento. When I arrived, I was on the gurney and looking at the bed in the hospital. And now a pelvic fracture is really quite painful. So the nurses were just, there were two or three women nurses. They were getting ready to move me and put me on the bed. And I was trying to explain to them that I'm really a nice person, but I had long fingernails. And I was probably going to scratch them, and I was going to scream. There wasn't much to do about it. It's just a painful experience with those kind of breaks. And they said, yes, yes, we know. And they started to pick me up. And very dramatically, the door burst open. And there's a man, an Afro-American with a white nurse's jacket, wild Afro. And he said, do not touch her. And they just kind of startled and stood back. And he went over to them, introduced himself, and he said, I'm new on the floor today. And I'm working on a technique of lifting people where they have no pain. And he said, and I'm writing a book on it.
Wow.
Then he leaned over, and he picked me up like a baby and put me on the bed, and there was no pain.
Wow.
And there was only one other person on the floor. That in itself was a miracle, you know, because for this hospital. There was only one other person on the floor. I was out on in a week. Granted, I had to learn to walk again, but considering I could only move my forearm, a lot of progress was made. He came every day while I was there, those 7 days. He never took my blood pressure, my pulse, temperature, any of those things. He only talked to me about the purpose of the human life, and that we are here for love, and to realize that, and to realize that we are love. That is our very existence. And so I was out pretty rapidly. There were lots of miraculous stories during that week. When I came back about a week later in a wheelchair, and I had a gift for him, I just called him my angel. No one, he left the day I left. No one could remember his name, and no one knew where he went.
So, we know where he went. So literally, you had God appear to you.
It certainly felt like that. Yeah, certainly. And you know, and God appears in so many forms. I have a friend who lives in a very remote area in New Mexico. And because it's remote and there are highways that go by there, they asked a lot of the people living around there if they would like to train for the EMT, the emergency medical teams, because they could possibly get there faster than a crew from a city.
Mm-hmm.
So my friend went and did the training. And then a month later, they came back for a refresher class, a sharing or something like that. And someone else in the training shared that she said, already I was called to an accident. And she said, I got there, and a person had been thrown from the car. They were laying in the road. There was blood all over. She said, I'm new to this. It was pretty startling. And I was just thinking, boy, if I just had some towels to mop up some of this blood. And she turned around. There was a woman standing with a stack of neatly folded white fresh towels.
Wow.
She didn't think about it. She grabbed the towels and used them, turned them around. The woman wasn't there. So as she shared this in the EMT class, the teacher said, you know, this is not unusual at accident scenes. You know, there's just help from all realms in all ways.
Wow.
So I thought that was really beautiful.
You know, I was talking with someone the other day about how accidents or where someone's really suffering opens the heart of everyone and they start giving and sharing and doing everything they can to support that person. And I was thinking about in 1989, there was a really big earthquake in San Francisco and the Bay Area. And
I remember.
And I was going into San Francisco to do my radio show at that time, and I noticed that people that wouldn't even talk to each other, like there was a street person that was always there every day, and there were GQ types that would just go by her and totally not even look at her. And they were talking together about, where were you when this happened? What happened to you? What happened to the people you know? And with concern and total connection. And I thought, boy, if we had that kind of concern and support and empowerment and love to give each other when nobody was bleeding, how would that be?
Yeah. Yeah.
How would that be? So in a sense, you're saying that it wakes people up too.
Yes, yeah. And even sometimes on a very simple level, like my family was in Port Charlotte, and I forgot how many years ago it was when Hurricane Charley, it was one of the first big ones before Katrina, was going up headed towards New Orleans, and it just like made an immediate, almost 90-degree turn into the Port Charlotte area and wiped out a lot of homes. And my niece says, she's, I think, 16 now, she said that was one of the best times of her life. She said, you know, our cage, they keep their swimming pools in a cage, keep the bugs and leaves out and everything and the alligators. Our pool cage was down the street in a tree. You know, our neighbor's garage was gone. There were huge trees blocking all the streets. But we all got together, and the whole neighborhood, we became family and best friends. And she said it stayed. You know, it's to this day that bonding that happened. To think it was one of her best times of her life just brought tears to my eyes. And I think with the suffering or accidents or illnesses, somehow it opens people up to see, you know, that could be me. That could be my experience. There's a sharing so they can see the oneness, the unity of us all.
I'd like people to be able to see that when people are really loving and shining and thriving and celebrating too.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to see people instead of feeling like their nose is pressed up against the window when somebody else is really winning, to say, and that could be me too.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
and the person who's winning, willing to feel equal or not take that as being better than or less than.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's back to that learning to love.
Mm-hmm.
It's back to learning to love, and I think that, you know, just the things that are going on now, I feel like people are learning to love themselves beyond appearances. Know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes. And appearances, it can be all levels, like economic status, looks. It's just everything. Yeah.
Well,
and, you know, that's that real strength when you're really strong and solid. None of those things matter, and you're much more capable in wanting to give. When you look at someone who's a real giver, a philanthropist, they're really strong and solid in loving who they are, and there's enough of it to spill over to everybody else.
Isn't that wonderful? You know, and that kind of giving, it is not from ego or self-importance or wanting power or control over people. It is being the living proof and tangible focus of the victory and accomplishment that divine love alone can bestow.
Yeah.
I think that's what everyone wants, you know. It's not all stuff or self-importance or any of that. It's the soul satisfaction that comes from divine love and being in the process of pouring that out.
And nothing feels better. From the selfish side. And the motivational side, you know.
Yeah. Well,
when you think about it, does anything feel better than that?
No. You know, in fact, I got to, just to make a long story short, I had this dog that I loved and adored, and he was a black lab named Bingo. How original, huh? And my husband and I had him when our kids were little, and he was so gentle with the kids and played with them and was just sweet and dear and gentle, and he got hit by a car, and I tried to replace him several times, and the dog would not be what we wanted. It would be too hyper or something, and then something would happen. It would disappear or something, and I kept trying to replace him. And one day I came home, and we had a new black lab, and her name was Velvet, and I was wearing white silk pants, and she had been in the mud. And she came up to me just wiggling all over, so happy to see me, just loving me with all her heart. And she put her big paw, muddy paws on my white silk pants and dug her claws in all, you know, just wanting to love me. And I looked down at her and I went, "You're not Bingo." And I saw how I was withholding my love from her.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at her and I said, "Oh my God, if, you know, I was in present time and just looking at her, she's a perfectly wonderful dog. I don't love this about the pants, but she's a perfectly wonderful dog just here loving me." And I went, "Why don't I want to let myself love her the way I loved him?" And it was because I was afraid of having a truck come run over my heart again.
Yeah.
And then I asked, what is that joy people, you know, it's being in love that people want more than anything. So where does that come from? And I saw that the joy I had with the Bingo dog was that I was always pouring out love to him. Everything he did delighted me. I was just pouring out love and pouring out love and pouring out love, and it wasn't unconditional love. It's like, "Don't put your muddy paws on my white pants." I mean it. Do you know what I mean? But
yeah.
He never did anything where I would stop pouring out love.
And I really saw that's what people want more than anything, to be in the process of pouring out love.
And isn't that so with a new baby, too? Everyone just, you know, it can do no wrong. And they just pour out love unconditionally to it.
Well, that's God's love.
Yes. And, of course, the baby gives that back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I know you want to give this transmission and gift, and we have 38 for you. We have 20 minutes left. I want to be sure you tell people how they can reach you, Patricia, and then explain what this is and how you came to be doing it.
Okay. So this transmission, this Diksha, all you need to do to receive it is just sit back and find a comfortable place to sit, a comfortable way to be, and just open up to receive and to have some gratitude. No necessary expectations. Some people feel a lot during the Diksha or experience things. Some people don't necessarily and may later. I suggest that afterwards, if you have time to, if you just don't want to go lay down for a few minutes afterwards, especially if you feel the need to or feel the energies running through your body, just let that happen or let your experience expand a little bit more. And I'm going to play some music during this that is the Mula Mantra that you may, I actually heard it on PBS on the radio some time ago. I'm losing her name as who was singing it on the radio. That's terrible. I'd like to give her a good plug, and I've just lost her name. Anyway, because she was over in India for the initiation for this, transmitting this. So it also transmits the energy. Devi Kamal. Thank you. I'm glad about her name. Wonderful lady.
What's her name?
And Devi Kamal, she does amazing, mostly chanting kind of music. She's quite famous in the chanting music field. Rappers aren't going to know her.
You know, I have a funny story about that. I was taking back a Chopin CD that's skipped, and the kid that was getting it back looked at the computer and he said, "You know this Chopin dude? He has a lot of songs. What band is he with?" And I realized Chopin was not part of his reality. You know,
we don't teach music in school much anymore, especially classical.
Isn't that wonderful? and I really...
Yeah, you ought to try listening to this Chopin dude. He's really in.
I wanted to tell you that I love this music. I just love it. I was just transported when you were doing it for the test, and I want to also warn you that when I use this for myself, I'm not just sitting here being an interviewer. So sometimes I go way out there, and at the end you may have to go, "Hello, Earth to Iris, are we still on the air?" So I'm just warning you, because I get into this.
And okay.
I think we're ready.
So when we conclude, then I will just say a little thank you, and if needed, Iris, there's Iris.
Yeah.
we have about 16 minutes altogether, and I want a little time to wrap up and tell people how they can reach you. Do you want to say how you got to be doing this?
Oh, sure. Two friends of mine were in India, Kiara Earthwalker, or Windrider, changed his name from Earthwalker, and Grace Sears. And they were among the first Westerners to go to this place called the Oneness University with Amma and Bhagavan, the two avatars there, and receive this diksha. And Grace had an amazing, huge kundalini experience and awakening. And Kiara, he said, I didn't feel much. I wonder why. And he eventually, after not feeling much, asked Bhagavan, why? You know, and Bhagavan said, you have a special destiny with this. And I thought immediately, oh, he's supposed to write a book about it. And sure enough, in a week, a book came out of him. In 6 months, it was out in something like 6 or 9 languages. It went all over, especially Europe. And so a chapter of my experiences is in his edition that's sold in the U.S. and maybe someplace else too, I don't know. But there's several people with their experiences in the book, and it's quite an energy transmission in itself. So when I was reading his manuscript, I had an experience with the manuscript and received a diksha from Grace as she came to the U.S. and started hosting other people who came here. And started having samadhis, and I thought it's just time to go over there. So in 2005, I went over there and received the initiation. And there's a lot to say about that, but that would take time. So
we'll do another show soon.
Quite awakening with that. Yeah.
So we'll do another show for that.
So it's. Oh, okay. That'd be fun. So it's good stuff.
Yeah, well, lay it on us.
Okay. So there'll probably be a little blank space here while I turn on the music, but the energy won't be in a blank space. So just sit back and just refresh.
Perfect.
Thank you.
how to reach you, and I want to invite you to be on again. Can you hear me?
Yes, now.
Well, I thank you so much, and I really felt that, and it was really wonderful, and I want to invite you to be on again. And Don said to email him that music, and he'll fix it so we can really hear it and the voices at the same time. And I didn't think of that.
Well, I didn't either.
Can you email it to him?
I don't know how to do that, but I'm sure we could
talk later and figure it out. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, my darling. Well, thank you for being on, and tell people how they can reach you, Patricia.
I don't have a website. My email address is loveisalltheris with an underscore between each word. Love underscore is underscore. You get it? Loveisalltheris at yahoo.com. And very much enjoyed this, and I'd love to do it again and with a longer transmission.
And we'll fix the music so people can actually hear it. Don's going to do that for us. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you for listening and bearing with us. I understand there was an echo the whole show that had to do with my phone, and my apologies, and my deep and profound gratitude for you, Patricia, and for you, Don, and for BBS, and for all the people that listen. That I get an opportunity to do this. I love it. I love you, and may all your dreams come true and be 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep shining until then. Happy trails to you till we meet again. I love you, and this is my wish for you, that all your dreams come true and are 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible. Ah, men, ah, women, ah, children, and yeehaw!